open mind, and I build a consent-delighted people. What the night is in store for you? Douglas Morris.
We've been hearing a lot about you, Nick, and your work with the Crystal Skull. Dale Walker was here, and he tantalized us one night for about 15 minutes about the Crystal Skull, and he wouldn't talk about it until the last 15 minutes of the show, because he said everybody would be wanting to talk about the skull. And he was absolutely right. So you're here, and we're for an hour and a half or so, we're going to talk about the skull. What is the Crystal Skull? Why is it important?
Well, number one, there are more than one crystal skull. There's more than one crystal skull. That's the first thing we got to understand.
Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
The Mitchell Hedges skull is unique in that it's one of the most fabulous, I think, jewels in the world. It's a 9-pound skull which has movable jaws that are perfectly carved out of one piece of quartz. It is optically fantastic in that light that goes through it comes out any precise place you want it to come out in the eyes. You can adjust the skull and make certain things happen. There are all kinds of talks about what it is or isn't, but nobody really knows. Nobody knows how to make one. Hewlett Packard, who did the study on it, their scientist there, agreed that it's possible in a year's time, 24 hours a day, they might get close to making something like it without a guarantee. It's unique for this basic reason, in that the British skull is locked up in a museum and you can't touch it. The Aztec skull is locked up in Paris and you can't touch it, if you can even get to see it. The Mayan skull is locked up in Texas and can't be reached. The San Jose skull is locked up in San Jose. It's the only skull that the owner allows people to come and touch and be with. The only rule they have, basically, is because we have a copyright, is that you can't photograph it. But you can actually touch the skull, you can sit with it, and you can watch movies taking place in this thing. If you're a scryer, particularly, scrying is where you use the physical eye and look into the crystal. You activate it mentally, and all of a sudden you see history going by. Whatever history was, it's a very completely puzzling thing. We could talk about some of that. Its value is possibly in the remains. It cannot be duplicated. It was found in 1924 by Anna Mitchell Hedges. A lot of the anthropologists and archaeologists have gone through a lot of trouble to discredit it, but they haven't been able to do so yet. It's been compared to the Moran skull. It's been compared to the Mexican skull in Britain, the Aztec skull in Paris, the Mayan skull, which we worked with for 3.5 months out of Guatemala. It's the only skull that's available to you as a person who is not an archaeologist or an anthropologist.
In just a few moments, you've told us some rather startling things here, Nick. Let me kind of recap them for you. The archaeologists have found a number of these skulls that are made of quartz.
No, they have not.
Who found them?
No skull was found by an archaeologist. That's why no skull is recognized.
Oh, I see. Where did they come from?
Number one, the British skull was taken, stolen from some people who found it in a tomb. And it passed through army ranks eventually to, a man by the name of Bernie. From Bernie, it went to into the Christie collection, or Tiffany. From there, it went on to the British Museum. The Aztec skull was, again, taken by French soldiers out of Mexico and eventually ended up in the collection, the Maximilian collection. And from the Maximilian collection, it ended up in the museum when Napoleon was going around raping nations and taking their museums. Just like the Vatican Library sits in France.
Mm-hmm.
The true occult library is in the Biblica in France, and that's the only place you're going to learn anything about crystals. Then your Moran, Dr. Moran, Digby, and a few others decided to compare the Paris skull with the British skull, and they didn't do that. They ended up doing the British skull, which is called the Mexican skull, or if you want, the Aztec skull, with a skull which was called the Bernie skull, which they claim was the Mitchell Hedges skull, and it gets into a lot of hanky-panky in the 30s. And that was the only study made by an archaeologist and an anthropologist on skulls in the world. The only study, and it covers three pages in a magazine called The Book of Man. There is no other study in the world except the ones we've done and so forth and so on. So no archaeologist. If you don't find it, let me explain something to you very quickly. If you, your museum, does not find it in a dig, it's unimportant.
I see.
You see, because no doctor at the museum or at the college or the university could attach his name to the find. And Mr. Mitchell Hedges, F.A. Mitchell Hedges, was a archaeologist and an anthropologist who was involved in some other things, which we can get into, but we won't, and because I was involved in similar things, and I don't want to get into
it. It's a family show, Nick.
Right, I know, but this has to do with such things as possible espionage and stuff like that. And so archaeology and anthropology are one of the ways he moved around the world. Just as the German archaeologists and anthropologists moved around prior to the Nazi invasions. And when they found the skull...
Indiana Jones, in order
to speak. What was disappointing was that there was no archaeologist there from a university or from a museum to put his flag there. See, when people go out on safaris and expeditions in the old days, they didn't go out for a week like they do today or for a couple of weeks over the Easter vacation. They went out for 1, 2, 3, 5 years. And they had to raise money and pay for these expeditions. So you, as an archaeologist, would love to be invited because your chances of ever going on a dig are very rare so that you can publish something. And if you're not invited, you get your feelings hurt. And some of the people who got their feelings hurt, like Thompson and a few others, Digby is one, and Moran and some others, make comments about the skull. The fact is, Anna found it. The natives are there who were there when it was found. Her father was not there at the time it was found. Mm-hmm. Her father came later. It took 2 months to dig the skull out of the temple to even get into it. The rocks were so heavy it took several men to move the stuff, and it was 2 months of digging to get in there. Then another 2 months before they found the jaw of the skull, you see. And this is proven fact. The other thing is that the why it's a private skull, this was another thing that hurt many of the museums and people in the profession, because in the dig, everything was given to the American Indian Museum or the British Museum. That was Mr. Mitchell Hedges' belief to give it to museums, but they did not get that skull, because when the skull was taken out of the ground, all the natives fell flat on the floor and started crying and screaming and praying. And within weeks, Mayans were showing up from Peru, from Guatemala, from Mexico, from all over. How the word ever got out that the skull was found, no one knew. So the skull was given to the natives, who had it for 2.5 years. Now, had it not been given to the natives, which they can take that because it's their property, and it's their tomb, their temple, they now were the owners. When Mr. Mitchell Hedges left, they gave him the skull. They did not give it to a museum. They did not give it to somebody in the profession. They gave him the skull, so it was his privately, and he took it all over the world with him. And that, again, annoyed a lot of people.
Well, it just shows the politics and bureaucrats.
It is.
And everything. But the interesting thing, the very interesting thing, the skulls all came, what, from Central America, Mexico, and that area?
Absolutely.
They are perfect replicas of a human skull, but made out of quartz crystal.
Yeah, particularly a woman's head.
A woman's head, it seems. But whenever you look at them, under certain light, now an amazing thing and an astounding thing begins to happen, and there is no explanation for it.
Yeah, well, there are codes to causing things to happen in the skulls, color codes. There are also sound codes, which we've been working on for about 10 years. And these pictures you see back here, which will be on sale at the First International Crystal Congress in San Francisco, are some of the actual photographs that we did color tests with. And each color brings out and produces a different dimension of scenes. Hmm. Now, the skull, you have to understand, is like this glass. You're looking around you. You look right through it.
Right.
Now, the moment you, Bill Jenkins, puts his hand on it or focuses his mind on it, the skull becomes cloudy and sutures begin to appear all through it. And in those sutures, each of those sutures are overlays of pictures that start falling into place. And as they fall into place, they just go on and on and on. And it goes further than that. Some of the pictures here, if you have a moment later, look at them. These pictures transfer to all crystals around it.
Oh, really?
Yes. In other words, if you have a crystal ball there, if you have this crystal pyramid that you see here there, the pictures start appearing also in the crystal ball, which we photograph. We have one here for you to look at. And while you're looking at pictures here, you've got to also stop and look over here at this pyramid or this ball and see it. Now, the thing about it is that when you take this ball away, it continues to show pictures. And so, we have people now we left there in November who are looking at pictures today and trying to photograph the pictures in the balls.
And the balls that they had. So he picked up the energy from the skull.
Absolutely. Now, he would probably understand how it happened. I don't, Mr. Bandini.
Yeah, Mr. Bandini may figure that out. Maybe it's involved with scalar energy in some kind.
You got me, I don't know.
But there is a lot of energy here. There's certainly something astounding and fascinating going on with the crystal skulls. There are how many of them? Seven or eight of them?
Well, there's nine that I'm aware of.
Nine.
One we just tracked to the Vatican or into Rome. This is the one that Hitler had gotten his hands on, and it took us nearly 30 years to locate in Berlin, and we were going to try and get there to see if we can get to the people who had it. And it disappeared again. And as of 2 months ago, our people in Italy tell us that there's a skull has arrived in Rome. And we're trying to locate that now.
All right. So we want to take just a little break here and dig into some of the things that you've discovered in the color coding and the light coding and the sound coding and find out maybe what that skull is trying to tell us. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. If you start looking at the skull after you've touched it or you've mentally focused on it, it just starts doing a movie show for you in a way. You're seeing one kind
Absolutely,
of picture after
yes.
another. What are the many different pictures that you've seen? Just, you know, some of them that come to mind. I saw a flying saucer there.
Well, we've seen, this is going to sound, the sounds we get, and which are intriguing me because I've been trying to locate these sounds, after 4 years, we found out are the sounds of dolphins, porpoises, and whales.
So you get the sounds out of the skull.
So we've located some of the sounds, and we went through hundreds of records and tapes and to find out what the sounds were, number one. Number two, when you start looking at the skull, this Anna Mitchell Hedges skull, the Mitchell Hedges skull, seems to be the oldest and the most perfect of them. It's not perverted like the others, which I'll explain the perversion. But you seem to be above it, looking down. And as you look down, you're seeing continents. They're different. It's like one big landmass. And then all of a sudden, it's like a slot machine. You pull the lever, and the land begins to move upward in the skull. And the land from down below seems to move where the up was, the land from below comes up. It's like land rotates, number one. Number two, four times we watched the land masses break up. Now, during these times that we watched the land masses break up, we watched people who seemed to go through a metamorphosis. For instance, their hands begin to change and their faces and neck begin to change. And they dig holes and go into these holes and water comes over them. I know it sounds silly, but I can't describe
any
other.
That's what you were seeing in the skull.
Okay. Then the other group, another group, seems to go into the earth. They seem to go into caves and stuff. Now, the third group, and I know you're going to laugh at this, seem to get on some sort of a thing, which we know doesn't exist, and take off into the sky.
A saucer-shaped thing.
You might say it's saucer-shaped, right.
Swamp gas.
Now, these are the three specific things. Everyone moves to the south, to the east, and to the southeast. No movement to the west. Land comes from the west, as you look at the skull, and begins to join, and then eventually, after the fourth thing, begins to look like American continent and the South American continent. And the African continent, all that seems to have broken away. Okay. Now.
Well, is it almost as if you're watching the movements of a speeded up look at the Earth as the land masses
move
about?
It seems to me looking at it, millions of years going by very fast. Then what happens
Steven
is...
Steven Spielberg is listening. I see a new movie is coming.
Well, this is... I know you. This doesn't sound correct, but I'm writing about it, and I'm going to tell it the way I saw it, and this is what happens. Something comes out of the sky, lands down on what seems to be land, and there's still a great deal of water. These people get out of this craft, or whatever you want to call it, wherever it came from, and they make sounds, and the sounds are either whales, dolphins, we've learned, or pauper sounds. Out of the water and out of the land that's uncovering, where the water's going back, people begin to rise. Some people come out of the earth, but very few seem to come out of the earth. And other people, you're going to get hysterical over this one, seem to fly. I mean, literally seem to have some sort of wings. And
I know a couple
fly.
Of people who do that, you know. That.
Yeah, well... I'm trying to... it's hard to describe this on the telephone. I can show you some of this stuff in slides. And where there were forests, there's ice. Where there was ice, there's forest. And there seems to be so many environmental changes. It seems that nature, as you watch, goes through vast time. You have to assume that thousands of years are going by. And then... nature seems to change it, and it's always changed with water and what seems to be ground sinking and rising. And then it stops. And when it stops, that's the time that you begin to focus in on the pyramids of Mexico, Central America, parts of South America, the pyramids in Spain and France, the pyramids in China in the Shenzhen area, the pyramids down in the Giza in the... most of which I visited, and all of a sudden, all kinds of things are happening, and cultures, and there are battles. Now, in the meantime, I have to explain to you that there are battles somewhere going on in the heavens, or what looks like heavens, stars, you know, out in the universe, and strange lights are being flashed back and forth, and then the sound changes. There's a different type of sound. It's almost like the sound would start in the left or right side and come into the center of the head and kind of explode inside your head, something like Dr. Lee Sinella's sound machine does, and your head seems to want to explode. Now, we alter this. What we do is we pour purple light into it, or indigo light, and we soften the sound. The color and the light seem to soften the sound so that the intensity of it on your head or your nervous system or your own electromagnetic impulse system seems to calm down from the light. Now, if we hit it with red or a real heavy gold, golden yellow, it increases it. And many of the people get sick or begin to feel very disabled within themselves, whereas green, bluish colors in the blue range, in the purplish, indigo ranges, violets, and complications arise when you multiply colors, where we're hitting it with, let's say, yellow and red, or where we hit it with greens and blues, or greens and oranges. All sorts of things are happening. Now, there's a main code system, which I'm not going to give you on the air, but let's say that some of the colors we would play around with are the seven master colors, orange, red, green, blue, you know, yellow and all that. And what we try to do is crisscross them. Now, Randy Fonce, who invented the color machine, which we used many years ago when working with communication with plants and stuff, he hits the skull or the crystals at 2,400 colors a minute. That's how fast his colors operate through his lasers. And we have had images appear outside of the skull.
Wait a minute.
I'm dead serious.
Wait a minute, Nick.
We've had images appear. I can show you some photographs of them standing there.
I was saying wait a minute because I didn't...
No head.
It wasn't that I didn't believe you, but I've got to stop and do something.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
No. No, wait a minute, too. I mean, the image is coming outside the head. The crystal skull is a remarkable artifact. How old is it, do you think?
Well, You're gonna. I'm probably dumb. I'd say anywhere from 25,000 to 250,000 years old. I'm sorry, but that's how I feel.
That's how you feel. So it's been around longer than Los Angeles.
Because in checking with geologists and people at UC and different colleges and universities, they tell me the things that are happening in my head or what I'm seeing could not have happened unless it happened 100 million years ago or 200 million years ago. Or,
yeah, certainly the movement of continental shelves.
And I found out after 10 years that such a place did exist. We were in Toronto, and one of the people up there actually showed me photographs and asked me, is this what you saw? And he called it Gowanaland or something. And I says, that's right. And he says, well, have you ever heard of Pangaea? Have you ever heard of them? And I said, no, I don't know anything about, you know, what you're talking about. And he says, well, all of these things have happened.
Hmm.
He says, but they had to happen millions of years ago. Now, you're trying to tell us that these people, millions of years ago, lived in the ocean, lived within the earth, came from the sky, and lived on top of the earth in a very sophisticated society. And I said, I'm not telling you anything. I'm just telling you what I saw.
What the skull is showing.
And what the skull is. There's not one skull, but several skulls.
And they're all doing the same thing, basically?
Basically, yes. Except the other skulls do not show four changes. They show two changes, and Mayan skull shows three.
Hmm.
Okay? Now, they show different things, though.
Wait a minute. If we don't stop, we're going to end up at the end of this hour doing nothing but commercials.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I'm so fascinated with what you're talking about. The Mitchell Hedges crystal skull in particular, crystal skulls in general, there are a few, and they are probably the most astounding and fascinating artifact on the face of the earth. And we want to find out more about them. We're talking to Nick Messerino, who has spent a great deal of time with these skulls and probably knows as much about them as anybody on the planet. And it'll be your chance to talk to Nick here in a few minutes. Let me give you the numbers. He is Nick Messerino. We're talking about the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull. A crystal skull that if you look at it, trigger it by touching it, or just concentrating on it, it starts unfolding vista after vista, view after view. That gives all of the impression that it's gone back into the very early dawn of the creation of Earth, and we get a chance to look at it. Somehow or another, it seems that skull is recording history right on up to the present, and sounds as well as pictures.
It goes deeper than that.
Deeper than that, okay.
Yeah.
Analyze this some more, Nick. This is fascinating.
Well, what happens basically with the skulls? Take the Mayan skull. We had it for 3.5 months, 24 hours a day. And I locked myself in for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday with the skull, nothing else. And everything that I knew, and I'm not an educated man, the skull seemed to know. It played back my memory bank to me.
Oh, boy.
And it played, the Mitchell Hedges skull played back my memory. Every fairy tale I could think of that ever came into my mind, my invasion, when we invaded France, when we invaded Anzio, when we invaded Sicily, when I was in Africa, when I was in Asia, it seemed to play my whole life back. Like it was taking more from me than I was getting out of it. So that, to me, it was like some sort of unknown computer that you sit in front of, and it absorbs mentally the information. You don't even talk to it. Yes, even though I'm asking it questions, it is taking my information and putting it in its category wherever it is. And I'll give you an example. When I was 9, I saw a skull in a mirror. First time I saw a skull, I just come from a funeral. It was one of my pastimes, going to funerals. And I figured it was always nice. Sometimes I even walked into the wakes because there was a lot of food and nobody knew who was there half the time. And during the Depression, it was nice to get some food and some other things. And it was always nice to go to a funeral. So I went home one day and I looked in the mirror and the skull looked at me. Now the skull, on its head, the crown of its head, had a black reptile come out. And then on the sides, over where the ears would be, other reptiles came out, one on each side, and one came out of the back. Now, the skull in the front came out and had feathers on it.
Now, this is what you saw when you looked in the mirror. And you should have seen yourself.
Yes, I should have seen myself.
Kid.
Yes, I've been mirror gazing since
back in those days.
I was a shiny medium at the age of four, and I did all kinds of seances and stuff like that. So I was very proficient reading mirrors. Mm-hmm. We would always have a mirror, and I would tell them what I saw in the mirror about whoever it was we were talking about. And the skull appeared.
We should mention that you do have this. You're well known for your psychic ability, and you do a lot of...
Slightly, yes. Whatever a psychic is, I've never figured out. But another thing that happened, so you understand, I can give you three instances. I'm looking in the mirror, and I see this person having a baby, and as the baby is taken out, this man and woman who are in all these Indian robes or feather robes, I consider them Indian, I don't know what they were, put the skull inside the womb and leave it there. The other one is where they are taking a child from the stomach area and they place the skull in place of it. And another one is where they are removing the heart from a man and placing the skull while the heart is on the chest within the chest cavity. Now, I forgot all this.
Yeah.
I really did. And when I was in southern France, I met my first skull outside of a museum with a secret society there, which we don't have to get into, but they have a skull. And they, for some reason or other, showed me the skull, which I never could understand. I've seen skulls from people who, out of nowhere, come up to me and show me the skull, and they tell me that they say things to me, and I answer in response, and I don't even know what I answer. But then we get very involved. One priest gave me a small skull to wear, which I wear around my neck at times, told me wherever I go in the jungle, if I would leave the skull out, I would never be harmed.
Hmm.
And he had a rose quartz skull that was on the Guatemalan border, which moved Bojors. It's the most beautiful skull I've ever seen in my life, and I've been looking for it now for 20, 30 years, whatever it is, and I'll go find it again if someone gives me a hint where it's at. But when I looked into the skull, here I saw snakes coming out of the top.
All of these things that you had experienced?
Everything I experienced at the age of 9 were coming out of the skull that I was looking into. And it baffled the blazes out of me. I can tell you 100 other experiences.
So it was picking up your thoughts and then reading them out to you.
It was playing back to me, or within its history computer bank, whatever you want to call it, I had somehow touched into the bank and saw these things without ever seeing a skull.
Uh-huh.
The first skull I saw was in Britain and then in France and so forth and so on, the first two were in museum. And here all these are happening in the skull, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, and then I saw one where I was a man, or at least it looked like me, because I kept looking at the guy, and I was wondering why he was sneering at me. He actually sneered at me, turned and sneered at me from the skull, and another one spit at one of the ladies. It gets quite involved.
You have a lot of things going on.
Oh, yeah, we had as many as 33 people at a time. I had 33 groups working on the Mayan skull. And many people, of course, have worked with the Mitchell Hedges. None as long as I have, other than Frank Dorlin. And the things that have happened are just... It's a computer.
So it's not only playing back history as it's recorded.
It adds to it. It adds the gaps.
It adds to it every day. It adds your history if you're in
front of it. Right. Anything it sees, it records.
Definitely, this skull is not something to put in the hands of my wife.
Definitely.
Definitely.
Now, may I make one comment? The Mitchell Hedges skull did not show the perversions, Bill.
Uh-huh.
The Mitchell Hedges skull at no time showed people being killed or sacrificed and it being used. All the other skulls did. The most perverted of all is this Aztec skull from Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And then the British skull is very bad.
By perverted, you mean it's showing a lot of
It's showing too
side.
Much of the... what I call sacrifices and slaughter. Whoever got the skulls did not understand its use, and because it was a skull, probably felt that being a crystal, it absorbs energy, so they gave it energy from life, from death, from all sorts of life forms were absorbed by it. Whereas the Mitchell Hedges skull shows none of this. The Mitchell Hedges skull deals with a society that I have not been able to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
That deals with clothing that I have never seen in this world, and places and buildings I have never seen in this world. I've been around a little bit, and deals with, how would you say, worlds that cannot exist unless they're inside of this world or under the ocean.
Or some other place.
Or, that's the point. Some other place. I don't want to go that far because...
Well, we do that all the time on this show.
People think I'm nuts when I talk about possibly another planet. It shows three...
Believe me, Nick, on this show, we don't think you're nuts.
Okay.
We think you're right on target when you start talking.
But Mitchell Hedges talks about three, or doesn't talk. It shows you three universes. Larger than all of our galaxy put together. And then it shows you a giant sun. And it has planets around this sun. And it shows you what looks like, and we know they don't exist, I call them UFOs, hopping from place to place.
Swamp
and then,
gas.
Then coming here. Yes, swamp gas from Venus. And finally lands here. And a planet out here somewhere, which looks like it's by what I think is the moon, because we described the moon before anybody ever got on it. We were able to look at the moon, and we were able to draw it and make notes of it. And a lot of it was proven when they finally got on the moon.
Have any of the astronauts ever seen the moon pictures? The astronauts that were there?
Have they ever seen our pictures?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Or looked at the skull?
No, we don't have many scientists interested in what we're doing.
That's very, very intriguing to me, that here is this astounding thing going on, and we have some astounding minds out there that are looking for information, keys to our beginnings. And it seems like there's a computer ready just to tell you anything you want to know, but we're just going to turn our back on it, which is in KABC.
The group
aboard.
Thank you very much. The first thing is, I must say, I have never heard anything like this crystal skull. It just is. It is something kind of blows your mind. So, as long as we're doing that, my first question would be, does Nick feel that it also can tell the future?
Should I answer that? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I think that what we're seeing deals with the future. Number one, in the visions in the skull, we see 13 skulls. And they exist in simple mathematical formulas. I don't know anything about math, so I can't get into it. But I think that if all the skulls were put together, we would have a more peaceful future, because the skulls show something in the future that has nothing to do with war. Nothing to do with famine, nothing to do with... It shows a contented society. You can watch this,
mm-hmm.
and you see peace that is just beautiful. It's almost like there's a love for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say it not only shows the future, but it shows the heavens are involved in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we ought to do something about it. But who can do anything about it? I can't do anything about it. You can't do anything about it. We have to do it on a tremendously international level, because everybody is so involved in their own little games, their own little ethnic cultures or sub-ethnic cultures or national cultures or prejudices, that everything that we feel from the skull keeps giving a message out to bring all the skulls together. Even the people who own the skulls will not let you near them. The British Museum will let you near its skull. The Paris Museum will let you near its skull. I'm sure that the one in the Chrissy collection, you can't get near. You can't even see the records on it. And I can go on and on and on how everyone has got the skull, and those who do have skulls are hiding them and not letting anybody near them. I think the skulls have to be put out in public. I think people have to be able to see them. And each person will gain from it, and the future will be a lot brighter.
You will be able to see the Mitchell Hedges skull up in San Francisco, won't you?
At the first International Crystal Congress, it will arrive on June 20th, Friday night, and it will be there June 20th, 21st, and 22nd, and it leaves on the 23rd and goes on from there. The actual Mitchell Hedges skull will be there with Annie Mitchell Hedges, who is a fantastically beautiful woman. And you'll enjoy her, and along with many, many other wonderful speakers. And I would suggest, if you can get up there, get up there.
You can see the pictures yourself as they just...
Yes, and we'll have pictures for sale. We sell sets of pictures of our actual research, and we tell you how to look in the picture and see something. We don't just sell you the picture. If you look at the picture, you may not know what you're looking for. But once we show you how to grid it, You won't need anybody to tell you how to look at it anymore.
Okay, Roger, does that help you?
Yes, it does. Gives me some insight. Thank you very much.
All right, I appreciate you being aboard tonight.
My pleasure. I always like to listen and come aboard. I was thinking this also seems to tie in with Gunnar Woodrow, too.
Yes, yes, it does.
Okay, thank you.
And with the Gladdens, who will be here in about a month.
Wonderful.
Okay, thank you very much, Roger. I'm Bill Jenkins on KABC.
Four times in a portion of the people being taken to UFOs, another portion being taken in...
Yes, ma'am.
You did see that.
Yes, ma'am. I don't prophesize. Number one, I'm not a channel, and I don't get into tally much. But, yes, it shows that nature, Mother Nature, is going to do its own job. You don't have to worry about the nuclear bomb because Mother Nature is going to take care of everything for you, mm-hmm. and you have to be prepared for Mother Nature.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know how often this happens. I get the feeling that it's thousands upon thousands of years. But I'm quite sure that we are faced with something that's more gigantic than any bomb we ever thought of. So we ought to stop worrying about bombs and worry about how to handle Mother Nature.
Wait, when you say thousands of years, you mean thousands of years from now?
I'm talking about thousands of years between each land change.
Oh.
So I don't know when the last one precisely happened. I would place it about 25, 30,000 years ago. In my memory bank, that's what comes up when I'm working with any crystal or with the skull, because I do a great deal of work with other crystals, and the answer always comes out that Mother Nature is going to take its own time and change everything around. We better be prepared for Mother Nature.
I see.
I don't know if that helps you.
Yes, that helped me, and I had that feeling as much, but I wanted to see, you know. And the other question I wanted to ask you is, I met this woman, and she was a clairvoyant, and she had this vision, and what the vision was, and I wanted to ask you how you felt about that. I really would like your advice. She had this vision that my head, my face was full of soot, and then it turned into a crystal skull. And I was wondering if you felt it was true what she said, and what would that mean? What would your feelings be on that?
Well, there is a metamorphosis that takes place. You're not the only one that's seen that or been told that. In the last year and a half, 2 years, many of the people, whether they're into crystals or not, see, for instance, the Congress is about all types of crystal uses, not only about skulls. And I deal in all types of crystals. Skulls happens to be one of my specialties. But I would say that last week I was told a similar tale. About 2.5 weeks before that, four people told me this story. And I'm sure Marcel Vogel has heard it. I know Rob Bonewitz has heard it. And many of the other speakers have come up against it. So what I think it means, basically, is that somewhere in your society, in your past societies, your memory banks, or whatever you want to call it, you were connected with the skulls, and that you have an obligation to the skulls, and the obligation to the skulls is to bring light to the world and to bring the elements under control. That much we've learned from the skulls, that these people were able to save the societies by watching the elements, by watching the universe and the stars and stuff, and it seems all of these people who were involved, who were able to come up with this information, got covered with dust, or some even said that they got covered with water or lava, molten lava, and that their heads became crystal skulls. Now, that's as far as I can go on that particular one without knowing more than I know right now. Mm-hmm. About you and about, you know, some other things.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, later on in the show, you'll be giving your address and phone number and everything where we can get in touch with you for the information.
Sure, we'll have all of that out for you, Patty.
Okay, well, that's great. And I was just wondering, too, do you ever give private readings with the skull? That a person can go to you and pay you for a private reading where you could read the skull for the person?
No, I don't. You mean read the actual crystal skull?
Yes, for the person, like in a private reading where I could pay you to read the skull for me, in relationship to me.
No, I do private consultations, but it has nothing to do with the crystal skull. The crystal skull is the property of Anna Mitchell Hedges.
Okay, listen, we're going to have to go. Patty, thank you very much for your questions. We're going to take a break for the news at 10, but we'll be right back right after with Nick Messerino and the fabulous crystal skull. Messerino, who has spent so much time with them. And
I can't wait to find out more of the fascinating things that unfolds as you look at the crystal skull. Also, we find that some fascinating things unfold whenever you take pictures of the crystal skull and then look at the pictures you took of the crystal skull. Ho is here. Ho will be our guest on Crystals here in, is it about a month now?
About a month.
You were telling me during the break here that you had some slides of the skull. What happened?
Well, what had happened was is that Nick had come in to do a slideshow, and we had done 2 days. And there was one slide in particular that I was really noticing because it was a full frontal shot of the skull. And in the bottom part where the jaw was, a number of us had seen this particular scene. It was a nice spring day. You could see the sun was out. All the hills and valleys were green. There was a little walkway with a wooden fence. And it was a really nice scene.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was Saturday. Now, Sunday, Nick ran the same slides in the same order. And when that slide came up, I looked for the same scene. And what I saw, and the number of other people with me, was the exact same scene, but instead of spring, it was now the dead of winter.
Now, this seems to happen all the time, Nick.
Yes.
People take pictures of the slide of the skull and get a picture, and the next day it's a different picture, and it's the photograph that's changed.
Yeah, it's just like a haunting picture that I was explaining to you earlier. We take a picture of a room like this studio, which we did in one studio, and we got a picture of something else.
Hmm.
And we found out that that existed before they built the studio.
Oh, hello.
You know, and it's not uncommon in Oroville to shoot houses and find something else in the picture, or shoot a room and get other people and different furniture and stuff. Well, the skull has a way of doing the same thing. It's an energy. What we're doing is, we call it working with energy. We don't call it ghosts. We don't call it really skulls and crystals. We're working with the energy within the element that we're working with, and the crystal has to have one of the best elements we know that's conducive and to the vibratory rate of a human being. Now, why the crystal skull is so much more powerful, let's give you an example. Simply, last time we went to work on the crystal skull, I brought my researchers, Ron Dickerson, Sandra Bowen, and Dale Walker, and I told them I didn't want them to go near the skull. I didn't want them to look at it, I don't want them to touch it, I want them to ignore it. Because we hadn't come to the ground rules of the project yet, so I didn't want to offend anyone. So, in the meantime, I took some measurements to see how much energy is coming off, and there was no energy at all. We walked right up to the skull with our meters and touched it, and nothing happened. And that satisfied me, because I'd done work with other skulls, and this one I had seen before. So about an hour or two later, I says, okay, I want someone to sit behind this guy. I don't want you to touch it. I don't want you to do nothing. I just want you to look at it. Well, we took range meeting readings again, and we jumped 20 feet. A minute later, we were 40 feet. A minute later, we were outside on the street. 5 minutes later, we were going down the street, still picking up energy. So I yelled up, touched the skull, and had this person put their hands, one of the researchers put their hands on the skull and concentrate on visualizing inside the skull, seeing what's inside the skull. We could have gone over a mile down the road, but it started to pour rain and I gave up. Now, there's an interesting thing there.
And you were still getting a reading.
We're still getting a reading. Now, you have to understand something. When you measure a crystal and its energy field, it has to be measured in a direct level with the crystal or with any stone. If we're doing jasper, rhodochrosite, or anything, mariposite, agates, you have to measure them directly at the level as you would a chakra at the level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what happened with the crystal skull that was fabulous is that we measured the top and it went up 20, 30 feet in the air. We measured the bottom, it was on the floor, it was to the sides of the skull. It was behind the skull. It was everywhere. It was like a tourmaline where the energy is completely wild. Only here, and the tourmaline is the energy goes in all directions. Here, the skull not only went in every direction, but it was organized, and it was like a wall moving out, not just like an energy field of stream of energy. It was a solid wall moving out against us.
Did you feel it?
Oh, yes.
You could physically feel it?
Oh, sure. And other people felt it, too. That's why you bring other people, because, you know, you can always say, well, you mentally did that. You don't tell them what's going on.
Is it energy somewhat like the crystal pyramid that Ho brought here, that you can literally feel the energy flowing off the top of that pyramid?
I could take that piece of crystal there, and by methods that I've learned to use over 50 years, probably increase that to 150 to 200 feet.
Wow.
See, and as Ho knows, I shocked him once in up north when he came up for a seminar. By taking a little piece of something and giving it to someone, the field jumped from 15 feet or less to hundreds of feet going clearly down the road. It's all a matter of the elements and energy and elements and so forth. But the skull didn't need that. The skull produced its own wall. And I mean, it was a solid wall on all sides and moved out from there. So you have to merge into that wall and become part of it. And I just think it's fabulous. I would like to see somebody like Marcel Vogel or one of the other speakers that are going to be at the thing get some of their equipment and take some accurate measurements, because we couldn't haul our equipment into Canada, you know, and...
And go through it all.
But
we've had a number of calls here during the break. Let's give them the address again and where people can go in San Francisco to see the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull and experience this astounding thing yourself. That's coming up next weekend, I think, isn't it?
Yes, it's at the Cathedral Hill Hotel in San Francisco. And it's on Van Ness Avenue. It's the first International Crystal Congress, June 20th through the 22nd of this year. And there are two phone numbers you can call and get information. Locally, you can call 818-761-0945. Where you can call the Bay Area, 415-873-0139, and you get all the information. If you pre-register, you'll save money, and you can pre-register up to June 10th, and then you have to pay a great deal more.
I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions about the skull after tonight. Ho, you're going to be appearing right at Alexandria, too, tomorrow?
Yes, we're going to be doing an appearance there. We'll have all our crystals. We'll be talking about the crystal conference, because I think this is a very important thing to stress. And Nick hasn't really stressed this yet.
I've been trying to get into it.
I know.
And I wasn't listening to the other stuff, you know?
This particular Crystal Congress is really the very first major gathering of all the people who work in the crystal field. You've got Nick Nocerino there, Marcel Vogel, who most of your listeners know,
yes,
Rob Bonowitz, who's the author of Cosmic Crystals, Mitchell Hedges' skull will be there, Joel Glick from Healing Stones. There's about 20 other speakers, and it's a three-day, it's Friday night, all day Saturday and Sunday, of lectures and workshops, and this is a very special gathering. So myself and Nick have been talking about it for the last couple of weeks. The number that we gave locally, the 818-761-0945 number, is Heidi Ho, and Dee Dee is there taking phone calls. And if people pre-register with us, because the date is already expired on that discount, but if they pre-register and just mention on their form Heidi Ho, there's an extension, and we can give them that discount. All that information is 818-761-0945.
And what time are you going to be at Alexandria, too?
Now, that is tomorrow. We're going to be there at 3 o'clock. It's a two-hour lecture, and it's only $10. It's a basic class talking about what crystals are, how they can be used, how we've been using them. And the idea is to simply take people who are beginners or people who have a little bit of knowledge and do some experiments and show them what's happening with crystals.
All right. A lot of things are happening.
There is a daily rate also that we haven't mentioned. For those who want to just go one day, either Saturday or Sunday, and Friday night, there's a rate for Friday night and either Saturday or Sunday, which Heidi Ho can explain, or the Congress can explain if you call the Bay Area.
All right. So they'll get all of that information out. And I might mention, Nick, that we've already scheduled you back on the show on October 11th.
Oh, I hope we get into other things like ghosts and
stuff.
And
we can get into all of
telepathy and
all of your fascinating world. And we're going to get into Dan's question about the time of Christ in just a moment. Okay. I'm Bill Jenkins on Open Mind.
Yeah.
We're talking about that fabulous and astounding crystal skull. Douglas Mayer is here, and we'll be getting to Douglas and his work with Rampha. Has Rampha talked about the skulls at all, Douglas?
No, but some of the...
Well, move that microphone over. You might as well, just being that you're here, join in. Yeah, jump right in.
Time correlations that Nick mentioned. And also, I have to talk about
Are we on?
There we go.
Oh, there we are. Here I am. Some of the times that Ramtha talked about correlate with what Nick was saying, especially about 35,000 years ago is when Ramtha puts the Atlantean deluge. And also Ramtha talks about a war of the god of lights, which took place a couple million years ago, and out of that war, the first planet, Melina, was destroyed, and then from there, Earth came along. So there was a lot of interesting correlations.
Well, we'll be getting into those
correlations. We'll have fun.
All right. That's Douglas Meyer. We're recording the show tonight in Optophonics. That's the first time a radio program has ever been recorded. You're going to get a copy of that. We were listening to the process here during the news break. It's quite fascinating because everything is exactly where it is. If you... Oh, I see. John Bedini is over there working his machine. But if it's behind you, you're going to hear it behind you. If it's in front of you, in front of you, in top of you, in top of you, and out of speakers. Right there. So something new is under the sun. Well, let's go to Dan. I promised we would. Dan, and thank you for waiting on the line so long.
That's okay. Yeah, still here. Hi, Bill. Hi, Nick.
Hi, there.
Hi. This is great. What a great topic. I am interested in the times of Christ, and I was wondering if you had any pictures of him walking around Israel or any other scenes of the times of Christ.
Me?
Nick. Or whoever, you know.
Well, no, I don't, but it's possible that other people do. I followed Christ's path many years ago in the 40s, and supposedly all of the places it was written that he went to, and picked up stones and dirt along the way, which I still have to today. And what I saw basically were things in my own mind, or memory banks, that related to what we call Christ, or what related to a Messiah, a man that was involved in trying to free his people, as you would want to call it, bring peace and love to the world, and also follow John the Baptist's trail, and was rather young, and so forth. So I had a lot of pictures in my head. And it's interesting to note that the skulls did not project these images back to me. This is the one thing that they did not project.
Back to me. So I cannot give you an answer there, but he's absolutely correct in saying that roughly we place it at a minimum of 25,000 years, and that basically somewhere about 35 to 37,000 years. Now, we do not put a name on the land. In other words, the names we use are from different geologists and archaeologists who use these words, go on the land, the Pangura and Langaria, you see, and stuff like that. I don't think it's important that you have a name. I think what's important is that you have a sophisticated society, and the skull and many of the visionaries and channels are picking up societies that existed, and that these societies were sophisticated enough to travel around the sky. Let's take the Mayan. The Mayan never used wheels. Now, I spent a lot of time on the Mayans. Why would they go around figuring out the stars and the planets and not use wheels, which all their toys had wheels on it. All the children's toys had wheels on it. Why wouldn't they use them for grown-ups? Unless they had a better way of moving around. That's number one. Number two, when the skull was found, how did the Mayans know in Peru, in Mexico, in all of the other countries that the skull was found? How were the Mayans all of a sudden gathering down here at this temple in Lubuntum in Honduras, when there was no way of communicating? There was no radio, there was nothing, and yet they start showing up, and they kept showing up, and they kept showing up, and they kept showing up from every place that you can conceive of. Mayans that hadn't been seen before, you know, were showing up. Where were they coming from? How was the message getting out? So when I think in terms of Christ, I think in Christ as one of the mysteries of life. And
so is the skull, apparently.
Well, the skull is also a mystery in life.
Yeah.
But I think it's possible that if Christ did exist, that he came from one of our sophisticated societies. And he had the ability that many of us have, because in reading, I have about 57 Bibles and testaments in every nation from nearly every country in the world in different languages that I've read and looked at. And I would say that... he said in all of them,
that what I do, you can do with more. That's about the best I can give you an answer there.
And yeah, thank you. And a quick second question. I think it was the first hour, one of the callers, and he asked a question. You talked about the future, and you said that you had a beautiful kind of paradise that you saw where people were getting along with one another, and there was love flowing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And my question is, you said there was an interaction with the heavens. What did that look like?
Well, I happen to get a lot of stuff from NASA, slides and pictures and stuff. And we have a show that we don't show to many people, which we use the heaven slides from, that fit into what we see.
We think we see them in the sky. We show
all of these slides with them. It looks like the universe. It looks like... It looks like somebody better take a look at the North Pole and the South Pole and find out what's really there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's the best way of answering your question without getting involved.
There's a lot of things going on there. Okay, Dan?
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank
okay,
you for,
bye-bye.
For being with us. We're 25 minutes past 10 on this Saturday night. Nick Nicerino is with us, and we're hearing one of the most astounding stories, true stories, we've had on this show since its inception in 1979, the story of the crystal skull. You hang in there now. Dino, is it with me? We're talking about the crystal skull. Also, Douglas, is it Mayor?
Marr.
Douglas Marr is here. We're going to talk about Ramtha.
Indeed.
And you can just start getting in here and adding add a little Ramtha ease to the skull here, because there seems to be some correlation of what the skull is telling us and what this marvelous clairvoyant Ramtha is telling us.
Ramtha one time, we were talking about how he reads people and how he reads people's souls. Basically, he reads the light. He said he goes out and catches the light. He goes out into the universe. And I couldn't help but think when you're receiving this feedback from the crystal that there is a catching of the light
definitely
aspect.
Definitely.
As the scientists are beginning to discover now, we are light beings. We are not just made of mass, just the body. We are actually beings of light. And as that light lowers in vibration, the mass actually forms itself. So from what I'm hearing, it sounds like the crystal skull is allowing these people to actually raise their vibrations to a higher place.
I think so.
And able to actually catch that light and then focus in on it. Also, the ability of it to give us the history lessons is real interesting.
It's just fascinating to me with something like this that is unfolding before us, that there hasn't been an enormous concerted effort using the greatest levels of technology we have to find out what we can find out.
There never is, Bill. Number one, most scientists are afraid to attach themselves to anything metaphysical in any sense, and this is considered quite a cult and pagan. It doesn't matter how sophisticated it is. But I was reading an article sent to me the other day, a doctor, Born Norenbaum, or whatever his name is, developed a new science. I don't know if you're aware of it, and this happens all the time. A new science. You know what the new science is?
I have no idea.
He discovered that the body is composed of electrical impulses and magnetic impulses, and that if you use these impulses, you know, that you can correct diseases and people can heal themselves and also do all kinds of... Now, isn't it amazing that we've been teaching this? I have been teaching for 50 years. Now, this new science is being developed. And recently, someone developed a new science whereby you can do remote vision. And you can actually look into some place, you know, that's quite a distance away. And it's funny that we've been doing this, and the ancients have been doing it for thousands of years.
Right.
And then we have dermal optics, which is nothing but psychometry, where we've been training blind people to see through their nose, through their hands, through their smell, taste, and all of that. And they now have a science called dermal optics. And isn't it interesting people develop it? See, if you change the name and call it a new science,
then it becomes acceptable. Now, how do you make Buddha acceptable? How do you make Krishna acceptable? How do you make Christ acceptable? How do you make God acceptable?
Well, how do you call the crystal skull something metaphysical when the fact of the matter is that you look at it and all of these pictures play out of it, even ones from your own mind? There's nothing metaphysical about that. That's very factual.
That's true.
That's true. That's scientific.
That's true.
And how are the photographs that are been taken of the skull changing from day to day? Now, Kodak can't explain what's happening to their film when it happens.
They don't venture to it. No photo people do. They just tell me we got a lousy picture.
it changes every day.
You know, we took pictures that have writing in them of a room. And we took them to some photo labs because the magazine would not publish them because they said they were phonies. So we gave them the negatives, and they run them through computers, and they find out whether they're real or not. Okay. So the writing starts to change, and now they develop the pictures again. Now the writing is different. And so they decide to run the pictures again. Of course, now the writing is completely different again. Pretty soon, the whole picture has changed. And I asked them, there were seven of them, three of them representing National Syndicated Press, and the others representing universities. And I said, well, what do you think? Are they phony or not? And they said, we don't know how you did it, but it's impossible. See, in other words, take Paso Robles. The refrigerator moved across the room. Four scientists sat there and watched the refrigerator rise up off the floor, 1 foot, move across the room and go down. And they looked over and they said, how did you do that? I said, how did you do what? He said, well, it's impossible for it to happen, so you must have hallucinated it.
Well, go over there and hallucinate, touch it, where
so
it moved to.
Some people just don't want to believe what they see. Just like if you were in India, or you were in some parts of the China and Africa I've been in, where thousands of bodies are lying all over the place, and people are starving, or people have been slaughtered, someone else comes along and doesn't see it. He says, what seems to be the problem? Well, why are you getting excited?
Yeah.
You see, some people will not accept reality unless it's reality that only they understand or they want to put into their pragmatic level, if you want to put it that way.
We call it a reality box.
So the skull is very real. All the skulls are real. The phenomena is very real. We're not sure we understand it, no more than we understand what your friend here is doing. Somewhere, it may have been understood 10,000 years ago or 25,000 years ago, and that scares the hell out of a lot of people because they don't want to believe anybody was around that was any smarter than them at that time, no more than they want to believe that there are people out there somewhere in the universe that might be as intelligent or more intelligent than us.
Yeah, they have trouble with
I'm not blowing your audience out, I'm just talking.
They have trouble with the fact that the pyramids are there. And we can build one now if you were to give a construction company unlimited funds.
I can tell you stories about the pyramids you wouldn't believe.
I imagine.
The most amazing thing to me about the pyramids is that we still tell people they were built as tombs for the pharaohs. It's still in every encyclopedia and
dictionary. They were storage houses, generating houses.
Yeah, they weren't really tombs. I mean, that's gone a little bit far.
No, but even as we know that they weren't tombs, we still tell children that. We still keep that idea going.
Well, it's sort of an ethic that we live in, and and I'm glad that we have an opportunity on a show like this to break down some of the doors and perhaps get some people to think.
Absolutely.
We have a number of people in the scientific community that listen to this show.
I think God should bless the fact that there is a show.
Yes, we've been very fortunate so far. And I'd like to know how, from our members of the scientific community, how those photographs can... mine.
You know, Bill, what amazes me is that why... some pictures change and other pictures don't change. Why some pictures stabilize after they've changed and other pictures will just blank out or disappear or appear.
Maybe it's a difference in Kodak and Fuji film.
Well, we use only Kodak. And we use 400 ASA black and white, and we use 400 ASA colored. And we've always used Kodak because, you know, Kodak supposedly is the best. That's a commercial for you, Kodak. And
how do they explain the changing photographs?
They cannot, and they don't venture to... They come up with some answers that you wouldn't believe.
Give me one, I believe it.
Well, they said that you moved the camera. Now, our tripods are pretty... They're as big as your TV tripods. They're
right.
Gigantic. So, or they said you held the camera. Or they said... Now, we photograph in total darkness. They said, well, someone moved the light. Well, we'll say there was no light in the room. How do you explain that? You know, what do you mean there was no light in the room? You can't photograph in total darkness. I mean, 20 years ago, how did you photograph in total darkness? 30 years ago or 40 years ago, we photograph in total darkness. And if there's energy in the room, it will be photographed. And its movement will be photographed. They say, well, that's ridiculous. This is an overlay. Or you put it in the oven. I've had people tell me I baked it in. And we can't pay to have all of our film negatives run through computers to find out if they're real or not. Either now we are at a point we don't care. We do it for our people, our researchers. We're content with the information we get. We no longer worry about proving it to the world because the world doesn't seem to be ready for a lot of the information that we're ready to give out.
I think a lot of people listening to this show are ready for the information they can listen to. Let's get back to our callers here in just a second. And certainly if you have any questions about another kind of a phenomenon that's going on, and that's Orantha, Douglas...
Mar.
Why do I want to say
Mar? Why are you having trouble with Mar?
I don't know.
He's a handsome galoot.
He's a handsome galoot, and he's got a simple name.
And he's got curly hair I'd love to have.
And he has a lovely lady with him.
Lovely lady.
So we'll entertain questions about both in just a moment, and I'll try to get Douglas Marr's name correct in my mind and in my computer. My crystal skull turned out to be made of just glass on this particular thing. We're back in a moment, old Taranta, and let's see what Craig has on his mind. Craig, thank you for hanging on there as long as you did.
Oh, I'm happy to, Bill. You didn't give me the usual introduction. I'm calling from up in Mariposa County, and Nick, after we get done talking about the skull, you've got to say something about Mariposa, because we've got a lot of it around here. So let me give you the skull questions first. First of all, on photographing it, you haven't mentioned motion pictures yet. Have you done that?
Oh, well, we didn't use motion pictures. We use videotapes, which are the same as motion pictures. Yes, we have quite a few of those.
And it comes out as clear as the still pictures?
Yes, except you have motion, and which you don't have in the slides. The slides are very distinct. We teach you how to observe them and how to grid them, and we have no trouble. A lot of people of the researchers like to watch the videos. Others don't want to. They watch the slides. So we have two groups of people who enjoy looking at both, and or one or the other. And what's the other question?
Well, as far as the photography, have you tried photographing it reflected in a mirror? Have you tried, for instance, polarizing filters, any other variations?
You can't name something we haven't tried.
Okay.
And we're mirror gazers, so we use mirrors all the time. At the LEDs. Mitchell Hedges School, last research project, we have Marie Antoinette's mirror. And the silver mirror, which belongs to the Mitchell Hedges family. And we were able to use that. And that goes back quite a few hundred years. And we had some phenomenal things happen. And, of course, you'd have to see the videos on that. And that's another story in itself. Yes, we do all that.
Okay. You were mentioning that you've run experiments hitting with different frequencies of light. Have you tried radio frequencies, and also have you tried extremely low frequencies?
We tried ultraviolet, X-ray, radio frequency, you name it.
What about the Earth resonant frequency?
Yeah, each one of them seems to build up a certain energy core and alters the picture somewhat. The thing that alters the picture the most is light with color in it.
Yeah, I heard you say that. I was wondering if it might be specially tuned to the normal, you know, human brainwave frequencies.
Well, the brainwave can create color. For instance, we have a lady who was working on the skull, and she turned it without even knowing it. She was looking through the back, and we were looking at the skull in normal light, and no lights on, you know, just normal light, daylight. And the entire front of the skull turned gold. And we had a man sit there, and he turned the entire skull purple. Now, when this happens, it happens in the frontal parts of the skull, in the brow, the eyes, the cheeks, the jaws, and it picks up a color directly from it. So what we decided to do was have each person run color bands through their head and see what would happen within the skull, which we did. We ran the rainbow. Each first we ran the rainbows, and things, the pictures start coming out in rainbows.
Are you saying you had people visualize the colors?
Yes.
Okay.
And then visualize specific individual colors, and that came out. Yes, we did all that.
Incredible. Okay, let me ask you something entirely different then. You were saying how the Mayan people had come in from various areas when you found... Was it when you found the skull in Honduras, or you were going to...
I didn't find it. Anna Mitchell Hedges found it in 1924.
Yeah, but you were going to remove it, isn't that what it was?
In Lubatan. And when the skull was removed, the Mayans saw it, and all start crying and laid on the floor. And the skull was given to them. From that time on, the skull remained with them for 2.5 years. And there's a great story about the fires that came from it and other things, which we won't get into. We don't have the time because there's another speaker here. And
You're saying people started coming in from different areas?
Yeah, they came in from hundreds and hundreds of miles through a great deal of jungle that takes us months to travel through. How did they get there?
Were these shamans or medicine men or what?
No, they were everybody. Women, children, men. There were many shamans or what we call rock women. Most rock people who work with rocks are women.
Mm.
And most ancient societies, most of the people who hold most of the knowledge are women. And that's another reason why we feel women were subjugated, because of her high role in society long before some of our organized philosophies came about. And so we had women, children, old people, young people. They came from the islands. They came from countries. They came through jungles. They came over mountains. And there was no way of communicating, you know.
I've heard stories about the tunnels that exist.
I know all about
that.
I didn't want to get into that. I know about the Child Far Triangle. And
I know some people that.
That
have been in some of those tunnels.
Yes, I have too.
They may have come through the tunnel.
I can also tell you where we believe the next skull is, and we're trying to figure out how to get there before someone else finds it.
I was wondering if the medicine men and the women had any special information for you about the skull from their own cultural history or knowledge?
No. All they know is the skull came from some people who were white, somewhat long hair, brown, black, and who were able to walk over the ground. In other words, not on the ground, but over the ground. And that story was very clear.
We have a bunch of those people in Hollywood.
Yeah, so we also have a bunch of them, if they take the right thing, seem to fly. These people are very sincere about it. And that would be the best way of getting into it. Otherwise, we'd have to do a lot of explanation for the next 20 or 30 minutes to try and tell you the story about some of the things that happened.
Let me just ask one last thing about the skull. I guess Bill asked if you had shown it to any of the astronauts. I was kind of surprised that Edgar Mitchell hadn't had a look at it.
Well, Edgar Mitchell Hedges, number one, was hired by the National Christian Crusade to prove certain things that had very little to do with psychic phenomena. Most people understood what his society was all about. And he got so involved that he found out that what he was trying to disprove happened to be taking place. So he had to change his story around a lot. He didn't believe anything, and all of a sudden he found himself into a tremendous amount of truths that he couldn't deny. And that's the best way of explaining Edgar Mitchell Hedges. The astronaut.
Ed Mitchell.
Ed Mitchell, yes. But I've met most of these people, but the other thing is that if they wanted to see the skull, it would have been available for them. There's nobody that wants to see the skull, the Mitchell Hedges skull, who cannot see it. All they have to do is go to Canada, make an appointment, and they can see it. They're just not allowed to photograph it. I have all copyrights on the photograph with Anna Mitchell Hedges.
Mm-hmm. Also, what about the anthropologist, Jeffrey Goodman, who's done work on psychic archaeology?
What about it?
Well, you were saying, you know, anthropologists won't have anything to do with it. And I would think he would be interested.
Well, I think that if he's interested, he hasn't made it known.
I mean, have you contacted him?
I don't contact anyone.
No.
I have hundreds of people contacting me, and the last thing I'm doing is looking for someone new to contact. I'm trying to avoid
people, I'm here to promote the International Crystal Congress in San Francisco on June 20th, 21st, 22nd. And one of the subjects is the crystal skull. We have tremendous speakers up there on every subject involving stones and the skull. And,
I'll tell you what, I'll let you go here. If you tell me something about Mariposa.
I can't tell you much about Mariposa, but you can come to one of my classes on Mariposa. I don't give classes on the air, but if you want a tranquility stone and if you want something that works with brain tissue, Mariposa would be a benefit to you. I'm not a doctor. I don't understand anything about medicine. So don't listen to anything I'm telling you when it comes to treating your body or your, you know, go to your doctor and so forth and so on. But other people tell me that this has worked for them. And that's about all I'm going to say about Mariposa.
Okay, Craig?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for hanging on the line for so long up there.
That's a deadly question.
Oh, well, we get into that all the time around here. Jeffrey Goodman would be a good man to get into this because he's a firm believer in what he calls the intervention, which was the intervention of celestial beings in the processes of the development of humankind.
Well, Eric Ahlmlum and Craig Ahlmlum wrote the best book on intervention from outer space. As a matter of fact, the only people who ever wrote a book that made sense on the subject. And if you can find the book, it's a very rare book. And they will break down everything. For instance, like the planet you were talking about.
Melina, right.
Melina.
Yeah.
They have written about this many years ago before Rompa, you know, became popular. Mm-hmm. And their information coincides with a great deal of what we got out of the skull 30 years ago, 35 mm-hmm. years ago, you know, 40 years ago. And are the closest writer. Next closest writer is Churchwood
mm-hmm.
in his books, okay,
right.
In his interpretations. Churchwood, who is completely ignored, is another good writer. It took us 4 years to find out. We had a whole library on this material, and accidentally we found out by watching a TV show.
I have a large library of his material.
Yeah, and I happened to be looking at a symbol, and I said, I've been looking for that symbol for 4 years.
He was talking about Lemuria most of the time.
No, he was talking about Mu.
Yeah, our Mu. Right.
Yeah, and so we started to go into his work, and then we started to go into Laplanche's work, and we went into Humboldt. We knew name, and we went into him.
I've got to get into a commercial here. Are we going to get into trouble? I'm Bill Jenkins on KABC. The New World. That's about Ramtha, and we'll be discussing Ramtha here in the next hour. But we have
about channeling, which a lot of your listeners know about. And it's so nice to come to a show where I can communicate on the level that I'm used to communicating on without holding back. I'm so tired of doing these 9 a.m. talk shows.
Well, you took your tie off, and you can just go.
And people have no idea what you're talking about, but actually what's happening is we're receiving valid, consistent communications now from other dimensions,
mm-hmm.
other worlds, other realities. And those communications are literally benefiting thousands and thousands of people all across the country. And Voyage, the book Voyage, is creating quite a stir because it's being read by a lot of so-called straight people who really believe in possibilities like this, but really haven't taken the step to say, well, maybe it could be possible. And Voyage is going to be, it's out now in trade paperback, but it's also going to be published by Ballantine Books
uh-huh.
in mass market, and it's going to be available all over the world. So we're starting to call it a crossover book now in discussing a subject that everyone seems to be interested in and everyone seems to be now starting to tap into. What is Ramtha? Ramtha is an energy field. He's just like you and I, except he doesn't happen to have a body. He's tapped into the Akashic Records. He calls them the River of Thought. He travels around the country in the body of Jay-Z Knight, who is Ramtha's channel. And they communicate, having seminars to literally thousands of people. Probably the most well-known participant is Shirley MacLaine. And in Shirley's book, Dancing in the Light, she talks about how Ramtha told her that within 2 weeks a script would appear. And that script would contain a mother-daughter relationship. And if she wanted to accept that script, that she would win the coveted golden prize.
It seems to me that sort of happened to Shirley.
It did sort of happen. Ramtha introduced me to Shirley in 1981 while that was unfolding. And so I was I was aware of what was going on, and Shirley and I communicated. And
we had a wonderful 2 hours with Shirley one night.
She is really a great grand lady.
She promised me another show. She hasn't done it yet.
Yeah, she's a grand lady. So what? Basically, I'm an author, and I observed Ramtha for about 5 years and how he communicated with literally thousands of people. And I broke through my skepticism to look at the possibilities with an open mind that perhaps there are other worlds out there, and we've all been looking for a seen world,
mm-hmm.
and they're all out there in an unseen world, and now they're beginning to communicate with us. And Voyage, the subtitle, is an adventure into unlimitedness, and when you function in an unseen world without a body, you are totally unlimited. You can tap into anything you wish to tap into in any dimension you want to.
Well, I have, a thing that always crosses my mind, and let me kind of harken back to Bill, who was our last caller. Before we went, had to take our break, Bill, we really did. ABC wants us to do that. He doesn't believe any of these kind of things. And there are a lot of people this way, and skepticism, I think, is healthy.
Oh,
particularly
so.
Whenever you're dealing with a whole new set of values and a whole new set of ideas and things and research that's going on as we do on this show. So I consider myself very skeptical about so many of this. But when someone is called channeling, and we're hearing more and more people channel, and you have observed Ramtha, as J.C. Knight goes into trance and comes mm-hmm. forth. We've had trance mediums on this show. We've had Kevin Ryerson and Thomas Jacobson.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to check the information that Ramtha is giving and see how accurate it is? Or is it the kind of information that you really can't prove or disprove? There it is. Sometimes it just sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. Are we getting valid information that is checkable? And if we're doing that a lot, then where is it coming from?
Yeah, that's one of the situations that I've been presented with. How do you prove the possibilities? How do you prove the potentials? First off, you prove it by people actually taking in the communications and changing their lives. I think that's a real significant test of a teacher or a counselor. In the book Voyage, there's a whole section devoted where people who have been in touch with Ramtha's communications and have taken them into their lives and then actually began manifesting things for themselves, manifesting abundance and love relationships and starting to get along with their family and doing things that they never thought they possibly could do. Then I was with Ramtha one time, and I was actually touching the wrist of him in the body of J.Z. Knight, and he left the body in that instant, and I felt an electrical jolt at that point.
Something happened.
There was an actual, not too dissimilar than sticking your finger into an electrical outlet, I suppose, but there was a slight jolt, and knowing that there was a change of electrical energy there that actually took place. And then with Shirley MacLaine, and how do you tell a great star like Shirley that there's a script coming, and how do you tell her about the future, and how do those things really work? How do those things start?
Well, we could just say he got lucky on that. That has he done it a number of times with a number of people? Because if he has, then the chance of coincidence begins to get astronomical.
Yeah, that's true. I would venture to say that eventually there will be boards, scientific boards set up, and what Voyage is doing to a lot of people is opening up their souls and minds to the possibilities of what could exist, the new technologies that could come forth. For instance, I've been in a meeting with him, and he was talking about an anti-gravity device, and these kinds of things. Somebody asked me in one of the talk shows, well, let's have it. And I said, well, we'll have it when we realize that we can live in a world of peace and brotherhood, when all humankind loves all of humankind, then those new technologies will come forth. So what's happening now, and what I feel people like Nick and you and Shirley and me are doing, is just kind of going across the country and saying, hey, folks, some of the possibilities here are real, real. For instance, if we had communicated with the unseen world, we might have not even launched the Challenger.
Yes.
Someone might have said, that seal is going to blow. Don't do it. But we discount these things. Einstein didn't discount these things.
Neither did Tesla.
Stevie Wonder. There's the greatest example of a current fellow who's totally tapped into his essence and allowing it to flow. And he doesn't care what he looks like when he's singing and doing his thing. He's totally unlimited. What Ramtha is presenting to us is the ultimate human potential, what we all can achieve. Shirley MacLaine is just an example of somebody doing her thing and making it happen for herself, yet we all can do it.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is the greatest test of a counselor. Ramtha isn't going to take your hand and say, follow me and you can manifest yourself a Rolls Royce or whatever. If you want one, he'll open the doors for you and he'll show you how you can do it. I started out as a total skeptic, wondering what was happening, and then as an author, wondering that if it was possible, then we could open up whole new adventures and explorations from everyone on the planet. In other words, this is something that everybody can tap into. It doesn't matter what color you are, race, creed, origin, or makeup, or whatever. You can all tap into the essence of self. We can all tap into the river of thought.
Well, I have noticed, and perhaps you're certainly more studious about it than I am, but that it's being brought to my attention that more and more people are channeling. Now, this is something people weren't doing, mm-hmm. at least out in the open, 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
5 years ago, I never heard of a channel.
Yeah.
And now they're doing it. I get channeled information sent to me,
mm-hmm.
Or information that is supposed to be channeled information, and from everyone. There are groups now. They get together mm-hmm. and channel together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always the people themselves find it a rather amazing experience that they are saying these things and thinking these thoughts, which mm-hmm. are quite contrary, quite often, to their conscious
mm-hmm.
thinking. Our belief systems.
Yes, one real good definition of channeling is when the channel begins communicating information that they're not aware of, and they communicate that information to people who need it or mm-hmm. consider it very important. One channel I talked to said that channels are going to become as plentiful as, and we're going to become very tired of channels within the next decade. So
you keep getting pounded on the head with some good ideas is the problem. We don't want all of those things.
Well, you know, until God starts talking to himself, you know, one of the great lines, you know, until we realize that God essence within all of us is there,
mm-hmm.
and it's been talked out of us for the last 2,000 years by the various organized philosophies.
Yeah, longer than that.
And we realize that we are the creators of the universe, and we are co-creating that universe. And then we accept the responsibility.
Don't say that, because I look around and think, well, back to the drawing board.
Well, you know, if there was a hell, you know, I think we'd all be there right now, you know, because a lot of people believe in reincarnation now. And if we've lived before, and if there was a hell, I suppose we would have, mm-hmm. we'd be there now, I suppose. So
that's another word that used to be bandied around only in the closet, but it's out now.
Well, in Voyage, there's a wonderful definition of hell. It's a shallow grave.
Yeah.
I met Jerry Falwell at the Sally Jesse Raphael show. One of Masterworks authors was debating Jerry, and they were talking about hell was a dump site, and some priest came along and said, if you don't believe the way I want you to believe, you're going to go to the hell. And that's where the whole superstition started. And scribes came along and painted this the devil spelled backwards is lived.
Yeah.
Evil is lived. So dogma spelled backwards is M God.
Hmm.
So, you know, the limitations that dogma has set up around us have taken away that God essence from us. So, and like Nick was saying, you don't really want to talk about God on the air. Good heavens. But,
I don't mind it.
Well, you know, those of us that are out there now, we talk about energy fields and the source. And the force. Right. And the light. And
down, Han Solo, down.
And we start saying, enlighten up.
Yeah. You want to be enlightened? Lighten up.
Enlighten up, yeah.
Let me lighten up here. Right. I just
a few moments, and if you have some questions for Douglas Marr, please feel free to call. Remember, give the numbers again for you about it, and Douglas Marr has written the book Voyage to the New World. It's about channeling, and certainly it's about Ramtha as well. And let's see what's on your mind, Bob.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
I'd like to ask a question of Douglas.
Yeah.
I read something about, in a quote from Ramtha, a new book that's out called Celestial Rays. It shows the photographs of ships landing on Mount Shasta.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a beautiful book. Anyways, he says something about the pineal gland. It's behind the pituitary, and apparently it's what most people are calling the third eye. And it's really not an eye at all, and I was wondering if you knew anything about it.
Well, yes. Yeah.
Everybody's nodding yes here. So.
Everybody's nodding. That really begins to open up a whole new adventure for a lot of people, because what we're finding out now is that as the pituitary gland is in receipt of what's called love joy, which is a state of blissful happiness, the runners experience this when they're running, jogging down the road, and they reach a peak and they pass this point. The pituitary actually releases an enzyme which flows back to the pineal, located in the back of the head, as Ramtha describes it. And that releases another enzyme which goes into the brain and actually opens up more of the brain to receive thought. The communications that are coming down now are that the brain is a receiver. It is not a reasoning device, that the reasoning takes place in the entire being, in your whole body. So that allows us to understand a Mozart or an Einstein immediately, because everybody can be a genius in this moment, because all they have to do is figure out how to open up more brain receivership. And you do that living in a place called unlimitedness, learning to live in the now moment without judgment. And some of those tips and clues are discussed in Voyage to the New World. And I think what's happening with people like Shirley MacLaine and other people is that they are actually tapping into this place called love joy. They're opening up their brain receiver, and they're pulling down new information for the planet, and they're actually part of a precognitive adventure that's really starting to happen. So the question you asked is really a very meaty one, because scientists now are beginning to show us how that enzyme really works and how the brain capacity really is increased. So One real good line is genius is just a thought away, that once you think you can open up that brain receivership, you will do it. And I talk to people who program themselves before they go to bed, telling themselves that they want to receive more from the river of thought, and they actually do. That's why people go to bed on a Friday night and with a big problem and wake up on Monday morning with a solution, and they haven't really done anything. They've just tapped into that source out there that flows around.
Just go with the flow.
That's right. Yeah, the river. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's becoming so commonplace now. People just call it the river.
Yeah.
Do you know about the river? It's becoming fashionable.
Well, certainly Ramtha is there.
Well, he happens to be the superstar of channeling right now. He is the only pure channel that I've had the experience with. And actually, Jay-Z Knight's soul actually vacates the body, and she goes through the death experience, and she goes someplace else, and it's a lot different than trance channeling or trance mediumship, where someone goes into a trance and you connect into their higher consciousness and higher intellect. Here, the soul of this woman is vacated out in the totality, and Ramtha's energy field comes in around Jay-Z Knight's and begins communicating fascinating information.
How did she get into this?
Well, you know, she's a fascinating story. She's playing around with pyramids. I'm looking over at our pyramid people across the table from me. And yeah, actually, she paper pyramids used to... there was a craze in the late 70s that they would preserve things. So she was putting food products under pyramids and this and that. One Sunday...
Patrick Flanagan had a lot to do with that. That craze.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she put a pyramid on her head with the thought that maybe it'd make her brains better, quote unquote. And Ramtha, this entity, begins to manifest, this full body apparition begins to appear at the end of her kitchen. And stood about 7 feet tall. It was as if golden glitter was being dropped through sunlight, as the story goes. And Ramtha appeared, and she looked over at him in total shock. And he said to her, "I'm here to help you over the ditch." And the ditch turned out to be unlimitedness. And all of us are in unlimitedness. We have this visualization of a three-dimensional reality. Whereas Ramtha told me one time, we have five. Let's tell them that right now.
Just stop there. And then you just bend
space. Light is time. Yeah. Right.
Then you bend space-time and different things.
Yeah.
All together.
Yeah. So what happened with Jay-Z Knight, as the story goes, you know, can happen to anybody and is happening to a lot of people now. And what I would like, you know, 50 years from now, when someone asks me what did Voyage to the New World do for the world, I would like it to allow everyone the opportunity to tap into themselves and to know how they can make all of those realities happen and how they can channel themselves. They don't need to go to Ramtha. They don't need to read the books. They don't need to do anything. They just can start learning to listen to self.
Just start listening.
Listening and love. Love self, yeah.
I have a friend of mine that's writing a song about that we may use in a presentation that we're planning. It's called Listen.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Hey, we do something. One more thing about the pineal gland.
Oh, Bob, you're still with us.
Hi, Bob.
I'm listening to what you're saying, but I just wanted to... I'm very intent on what you're saying, but all these experiences, apparently, with the way Ramtha described the pineal gland, or however you say it, is that it's not a gland so much as it's an area that where your concentration gets focused on, and in a lower vibratory rate, they actually are crystals in the so-called gland. And when your life force goes up through the spine and focuses in that area, it opens like a flower, because it's, you know, like you've seen snowflakes, or like they pattern after flowers. Your thoughts are the same way. It's just when you're concentrating more on the reactive mind, as opposed to that higher consciousness, that dream state, astral, whatever, ethereal, many names, but it's all the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well said.
Well, I mean, and really, the Christ consciousness, couldn't that mean crystallized consciousness of thought?
Well, sure. You know, and you know, being able to tap into that higher, well, that intuitional sense, or that super consciousness. Well, that's another word that's coming out. Super consciousness seems to be a palatable word that every religion can relate to. The premise that attitude controls it all, Bob, is where I really like to talk, because the morning is only the morning if you declare it such. I mean, you're only living in happiness and joy if you declare you're living in happiness and joy. So once you make that declaration, then your life embarks into this whole new adventure of exploring the grandness and the awesomeness of self. Because according to Ramtha, and as we go back into the early communications from Ramtha, where he talks about creation, that we were all there at the moment of creation. And that all of the social consciousnesses that we have been experienced through all the eons is a part of our soul. And we tap into that anytime we want to. People tell me that they undergo past lives, incarnational experiences. And they are tapping into not only their own experiences, but experiences that other people have experienced with them. And I also am firmly convinced that we live multi-dimensional lives now. That's where all the people are coming from. Our souls are taking numerous bodies. And that's a great reason never to hate anybody, because you never know if you're hating yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing that you say that, because 10 years ago we taught that very secretly in private.
Did you really?
Yeah. And you're now teaching it publicly. And in the 40s and the 50s, we were very frightened to let anybody even know that we were teaching it, up until the time Mosang Rampa Tuesday wrote his book, Ridiculous or Fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
No one would even think about publicly mentioning it.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you know, you'd be really surprised at all the talk shows that I've done. Every host and hostess have said, yeah, you know, I've heard little voices, and yeah, I've had astral experiences, and I know something's going on.
They've had astral experiences, other talk show hosts?
Can I interrupt you for one moment?
Sure.
I've never had one.
We'll have one tonight.
you asked him for proof. We did a 4-year project on regression.
Mm-hmm.
Did several hundred people. And we were able to prove what he just said, that people are living multiple lives, because by using various stages of trance meditative states of deep hypnosis and put them in regressions without suggestion, so allowing them to flow freely from life to life, we found that several of the people were floating to lifetimes. When we'd ask them where they are, they'd say, I'm in New York, I'm in Paris, I'm in London, I'm in South Africa. Back in the 50s, of the 200 or more people we worked on, 40% of them named the cities, the addresses, the graves, the everything, of who the other people were that they were. We said, no, you're not that person. You're this person. No, I am this person. And we were able to verify these things because these were people who were living here and now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I forgot who it was that we had on the show that had been working these experiences with these tandem lives.
Mm-hmm.
And in that experiment, they found the two people, or the other person, and they met.
Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah.
And it was a very loving situation, by the way.
That's what I'm saying, we did in the 50s, yes.
Yeah.
Someday, someone's going to invent a little machine. Well, probably similar to Curlian photography. And we're going to focus it into a street in New York City, and we're going to see this thread that connects all these people.
Hmm.
And then we'll say, hey, Stevie Wonder was right. You know, those songs are really
right and, on target with that.
Even New York. Yeah.
Well, Bob, I hope we answered your question.
Yeah, I just want to say one more thing that from what I've read, that Mu is going to rise again.
What's that?
That Mu is actually going to rise again. I hold in my hand right now a piece of onyx from Mu that I found, and I know I was here before. I found faces in the mountains that were carved of Brahma. Now, how in the world would a face of Brahma be up in the mountains here? This was part of Mu.
Let me, according to Ramtha, and this is some new information for the planet, that Atlantis didn't think it was rained upon. It's the basic premise. And the Atlanteans actually had the laser power. And the date goes back to about 35,000 years, and this is all according to Ramtha.
Right.
And there were wild beasts running around the planet at the time. And there were also people called the Lemurians, who were called soulless. And at this time, this was where the soul was removed from womanhood at this time also. And the soul was taken away. And the Atlanteans were experimenting around with lasers, trying to rid the planet of these beasts. And the laser blast took off. And at the time, Earth was surrounded by a cloud structure similar to Venus now. And the laser blast severed the stratum, and the great flood began, the storms began. And the rains rained down, and the floods came. And the Atlantean Lemurian civilization is sitting between India and North American continent now. And up in the Pacific Northwest, Washington, up in those areas are where some of the high points of it remained. Now, when that happened, that was the first time, according to Ramtha, that we experienced death. Prior to that time, we never thought of death. We only thought of us as being eternal beings that live forever. And at that time also, the fear, that great superstition, fear, came into our being. And we saw our families flee away from us, and our children flee. And that was where the fear of social consciousness, from that point, according to Ramtha, and according to the book, that was where we decided we needed nations. We needed governments. We needed religions to protect us.
What a mistake.
Well, thank you very much.
All right.
Really gracious of you to let me stay on so long.
I could talk on this every
Bob, minute. it was a good question, and I appreciate it.
Yeah.
We're 22 minutes away from midnight on this Saturday night. With me is Douglas Marr. We have Nick Misurino standing by here. We've been talking about that crystal skull. We're now talking about Ramtha and Douglas's new book called The Voyage to the new world.
That that we talk about is the world that Nick sees in his skull. That's what I was so interested in, the world of peace and brotherhood and joy and bliss and everyone. You see, if we all knew we could manifest anything we wanted to, we wouldn't need to war for it.
That's true.
They would study TK and they'd find out what they can do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what books like Voyage and Skulls Like Nick are doing is presenting to the entire planet how they can tap into the source and make it happen for them. And then you get into this place where you don't need it because you got it.
I want to tap into a source that lets us have this show.
We won't need them.
Well, right now...
We do.
Right now, we think they're a very, very good idea. It's Open Mind on a Saturday night. Lanza. And let's see. I think Greg has a line. Has something here. Hello, Greg.
Hi. I have a question for Doug.
Right on.
Okay, Doug. I'm pretty naive to this, but I do feel a sense of power. I do call it ESP, mental telepathy, whatever you want. My problem is that I haven't got to the point to where I can challenge it yet. Channel it. And I think I'm right in the middle.
Mm.
And what is really awkward is I'm finding out a lot of negative feedback.
Oh, yes.
And it's kind of built a brick wall up. And what do you suggest to me?
Well, the first, when a beautiful being realizes that they're beginning to raise their vibrational rates, the first sign of it is the receipt of negative comments from friends and family. And
your own consciousness.
Your own consciousness. Yeah. And that's what we talk about in the book known as Unlimitedness, is when you allow that thought to come through. And people who are bringing forth the new inventions and the new technologies now are allowing that unlimited thought to come through. And the real key, Greg, is not to judge yourself.
Mm-hmm.
We judge ourselves consistently all the time, and that limits us. That puts us into the box.
Right.
And that closes the lid over ourselves. And when we can open that lid and allow our truth to permeate without making our truth a universal truth, and by that I mean that we allow everyone else their own truth, then you kind of get into a place where you don't really care what people say about you or think about you, because you're just in your own space doing your own thing. All of the great songwriters today, when they tap into that source and create that magnificent song, that's what they're doing, basically. The great authors that you see today, and the ones that are going to come, and the great channels that we're going to have on this planet, are those who are just here having a great, great fun time.
Right.
And allowing the flow to flow and going with the flow. And if we would stop judging ourselves, we would open up a whole new paradise for us. But you know, we get up in the morning and you know, we look at our face and comb our hair and we stand on the scale and we constantly judge ourselves. People smile at us and we're happy, and people frown at us and we're sad, and we're through the process of judging self. So that's why Stevie Wonder is such a great example.
Right.
I mean, he can't see what people are feeding back to him.
Exactly. And if I can remember back a book I read, there has been a test where a blind man was actually given his sight back through surgery.
Mm-hmm.
And he drew such magnificent pictures beforehand. And when he realized that he could see, he died within 2 months.
Yeah. Yes.
And
fascinating.
I feel the power, I really do. Mm-hmm. Let me ask you another question, just kind of put you on the spot again. I don't know, that's why I'm asking. I don't mean to put anybody
down. You know, none of us really know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the guy that invented the plow, you know, he didn't know that he would, you know, he would change the agriculture on the planet forever.
Right.
And even then that the church said, don't do this, this is blasphemy. Galileo, Copernicus, you know, he's still...
Galileo is still excommunicated.
Yeah.
Right.
So there are those kinds of people that are the adventurers.
Right.
And they go out and accept the adventure.
I guess so.
And you know, when they make it big, we put them out on the plateau. We turn them into idols.
Right.
You know, they make a fortune. They make $100 million, and suddenly they're to be worshipped.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly we couldn't do it ourselves, you know. So what's going to happen, what I feel is happening with the new world, that I write about, is a world where everybody comes into their psychic powers, if we can call it psychic powers, comes into their super consciousness, and they do this, and they tap into self, and they do it not to form a new religion. We only have 11,000 religions now.
Something like that.
We don't need another one.
I think that's part of my problem, too. I wasn't brought up in a really church-going family, but I'm always looking. I'm going from one church to another and stuff. And I feel real close to God, and I feel a Christian, but at the same time, I feel this power. And it's kind of like a tug-of-war, you know, mentally with me. It's a fight that I'm having. I've got these people on one side saying it's not right, it's terribly wrong, you shouldn't even think that way. And then I've got myself saying, but yet, you got to let it go. You know, and it's just, it's confusing for me.
Well, do you know what the definition of God is? Just to talk religion for a second.
All I know is my own.
Well,
I don't know my own.
Every religion defines God as omnipresent,
mm-hmm.
which means he's present. He or it or she is present in everything, everywhere, all the time. And if he's present in everything, if it's present in everything, then certainly it's present in all of us, and certainly we are equal in that light. Every religion that I've studied has called that blasphemy. That's how far away they are from the new realities that are right around the corner. And it's okay. They can have that space, and they can be that way, and they can limit anybody they want to limit. In 1984, we gave $29 billion to religion because they told us we had to go through them instead of through ourselves to God. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have given the money to religion. I'd like to know what they're really doing for us. All I've seen is tremendous separation created in families,
mm-hmm.
in countries, and in nations.
Build a lot of buildings.
They've remained untaxed for centuries. They create the power of separation, againstness. And as I said earlier, there are 11,000 organized religions, and every one of them will tell you that the other guy is wrong,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to hell. Now, that is a great sadness for me, to believe that we can't think unlimitedness because we're sinners.
Mm-hmm.
That is what is holding you back and a lot of other people back. And let yourself go, enjoy the flow, discover the grandeur of self, and discover what you are, and let everybody else have their own truth. That's what I feel the new world is all about.
I hope that helps you, Greg.
I'm sure it will. I, too, am reading one of Shirley's books, and I'm waiting for the day that you have her on. But,
Come on, Shirley, get on the stick.
It's really, you know, I called last Sunday, and I was talking to the pastor and whoever else they
mm-hmm.
had on, and it was really frustrating for me because I know where I'm at, and
right.
I want to grow. I want to get, I want to become more. I have a vision of where I want to be.
Very good, Greg.
And at the same time, you know, I was getting negative stuff back. But I hear what you're saying, and I'll keep going.
Good. Best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind on KABC. You can get to your question, Terry, if you quit.
No, I didn't quit.
No, I said if you're quick.
Oh, well, if I'm quick. Oh, okay. My question is, this has been a fascinating conversation. I went to a workshop recently, and there was a discussion about record keeper, which is a triangular shape which appears on crystals, and that these are like storage houses of information, sort of like a micro dot, sort of, that's what I gathered is the inference there, and that these messages are to lead us to a place that is of peace and of love and of unlimited expansion. And earlier when we were talking about the crystal skull, and there was some mention about when other crystals are placed around the skull, messages are transferred to other crystals. I guess what I want to know is that was just a discussion that I heard, and I wondered if you could elaborate on a little bit further, either of your guests. Are crystals, can they become a tool for enlightenment, a source to tap off, not necessarily that they are the source, but another source to get some of this information? Can you comment on that?
Well, yes, a crystal is a tool. Let's first understand that. A crystal works with the human energy, with the human mind, and it is a tool. It is nothing else but a way of helping you, if you will, put your knowledge together or your energies together and do certain things that you wish to do. Some people use it for healing. Some people use it to gain more knowledge. Some people combine and merge with it, such as Mr. Mars was talking about. We call it astral body, astral senses, into the seven levels, each having seven dimensions, each one below that having seven levels, which comes to 500-something levels. That's knowledge that's been taught for thousands of years. And the crystal helps you venture into some of this. And if you are prepared for, one, to love yourself,
mm-hmm.
number two, to like yourself,
mm-hmm.
number three, to observe that which is negative as well as that which is positive, you'll find that merging into the crystal or with the crystal. In the old days, we always started out with a tree, and from the tree we moved you to stones to a crystal. And you begin to flow very quickly and very openly. And many of the things, such as the former questioner asked about the pineal gland and so forth
yeah.
and so on, begins to take place. Now, we can activate these things, but you don't really need all these tools.
Mm-hmm.
What you need, basically, is you. You have to first come to a love for yourself. You
yeah.
have to come to an understanding for yourself.
I can relate to that.
And then the other thing is just a tool. It helps balance it.
I guess that's what I need to know.
Yes.
Because through A Course in Miracles, I have reached that level of consciousness. That
that's
is,
a very
is,
good course.
Yes.
You know what, Terry? We've just reached a level of consciousness
okay.
here, which says we're going to have to go by
All
now.
Right. Maybe I'll see one of these fellows tomorrow at Alexandria.
Yeah, get on over there.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for that question. And that'll have to wrap it up. Nick Messerino and the Crystal Skull have been here. Douglas Marr has been here about Ramtha and about channeling. Master Ho will be at Alexandria 2 tomorrow. And you can see the Crystal Skull next weekend in San Francisco. Where is it?
It's at the Cathedral Hotel on Van Ness in San Francisco. It's the International Crystal Congress. And it's between June 20th, starts Friday, and ends Sunday night.
That's it.
You can get the bonus.